Well, how many people watched the Olympics last night? Anyone? Come on. I mean, it was the last race of Michael Phelps, right? Supposedly the last race of Michael Phelps. And so we were watching it, and you know, some of the 10,000 meter run, I don't know if you guys saw this, like the winner, Mo Farah, he fell down in the race at one point. He like tripped and fell down, and he got up and he ended up winning. It was absolutely amazing. But we were watching it, and Reagan came down and she really wanted to watch a movie, and I'm like, are you even American? I mean, this is the last race, right, of Michael Phelps. We have to watch it, and we did, and we got to see it all. It was awesome. It's really cool. You know, I watch the Olympics, and I see some of the things that they do, and I'm like, how did they ever get to that point? You know, how did they get to the point where they could do those things and do them in front of millions of people? You know, like if you watch the gymnastics, I think to myself, how do they ever do that? When's the first time that they tried that? You know, and what did that look like? And I really think that it has to do, maybe it looks a little bit like this video. Man, so maybe that's what it looked like the first time they tried some of those things. I could totally see myself doing so many of them. What I love is the people that are around, you know, the people that are there spotting them. You know what I'm talking about? They're like, they're watching them, and that one guy that this was going on, and he turns around, and then like this sheep falls, and you know, they did not do their job. So I think it's important, though, to think about someone in your life who is spotting you. Right? Having somebody who is there, having somebody who can help lift that weight when you need to lift that weight, someone that is there to stop you from falling or stop you from doing some of those things. Because every one of those Olympians that we see, every single one of them have people in their life, right? They have friends, coaches, whatever you want to call them. In fact, it is so necessary to have those type of people if you're ever going to get any better than what you are. Solomon, King Solomon, the wisest man ever lived, he said, whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. If you want to be wise, you walk with the wise. You know, if you just hang out with fools, you will just be a fool, because our friends matter. Last week, I asked you all to write down a name of your closest friend, all of your closest friends. And after many conversations this week, what I realized is that we don't have a lot of close friends. That each one of you, the people that I have talked to, wrote down one name, maybe two names, because we are in life relationally unsatisfied and relationally impoverished. In fact, sociologists, they talk about three different types of poverty. There's material poverty. That means going without, not having enough. We know what that looks like. The second type of poverty is spiritual poverty, because you can have all the money in the world, but yet be completely empty, be completely bankrupt with no real hope in life. You know, you can drive around all of those neighborhoods and those houses on the southwest side, on the northwest side, and you could look at the house that they have, the cars that they drive, and you're like, wow, that's awesome, that's amazing. But probably more than not, have no hope in life, because they are completely impoverished relationally. If you've ever been on a missions trip, then in a developing country, you could totally understand, because you've probably experienced this, because this is probably what happened on your trip. So you go to that place and you're floored at what they don't have. You know, like when we went to Belize and they said, you're going to sleep over here on the cement, the bathrooms, and that's a very generous term, is behind this building, right? And you'll look at the things that they don't have and you're just amazed at how they can go without. But a couple days into the trip, you start to be a little jealous of what they do have, because they have something that we don't. They can have nothing materially, but they have riches in regards of spiritual things, in regards of relational things. They depend on each other. They need each other. They have each other. Their community is so much greater than what we experience here. They can have nothing, but it doesn't take long to see their wealth. They have abundance of spiritual and relational riches. There's no doubt about it, that stuff doesn't consume them. In fact, the lack of material things strengthens them. And then here, we have so much, but it seems like we experience poverty on a different, but what seems to be a far greater level. We're suffering relational poverty, and we don't even recognize it. But we do know there's something not quite right. We do know there's something missing, but I'm thinking that it's not something missing, but probably more like someone missing. Because you and I may be just one friend away from changing our whole world. In the Bible, Paul had a friend like that, and his name was Barnabas. Paul was someone who had his life suddenly and radically changed because that Jesus came to him on the road. I mean, literally came to him and changed his life completely. And so Paul was like, okay, I know Jesus now. I want to tell people about Jesus. I want to preach about Jesus. I want to tell my friends and everybody that I had talked to in my life. I want to start telling them about Jesus. But the Christians were like, wait a minute. They weren't quite sure. And then Acts chapter 9, we get to see that this one person, Barnabas, really changed the trajectory of Paul's life. In verse 26 of chapter 9, it says, and when he had come to Jerusalem, he attempted to join the disciples, and they were all afraid of him, for they did not believe that he was a disciple. Obviously, before Paul was Paul, he was Saul, and he was known as the chief persecutor of Christians, and now he says he is a Christian. And the other Christians, the disciples, are like, you know, wait a minute. Just a few weeks ago, you were persecuting us, and then now you want to join us. Now you want to be in our group. And honestly, if you think about it, you can't really blame them. You know, because they could think that, well, he used to be this and used to do these things, and now he's just trying to get in, right? And he wants to fool us, he wants to trick us, and then he's going to take us all out. We can't really blame him, but then you see what Barnabas does. In verse 27, it says, but Barnabas took Paul, and brought him to the apostles. I love that, because there's a couple things I see in that. Number one, what I see is that Barnabas believed in Paul. To have somebody in our life that believes in us changes everything, right? To have someone who believes in us can change everything about our life. If we don't have people like that, we'll never get past where we are right now. Having someone that believes in us changes everything. And I also love the fact that Barnabas physically took Paul to the disciples, right? He said, I want you to come with me over here to these people. And I'm pretty sure that we all have someone in our life that we need them to meet these people. You know what I'm saying? Like, we'll have this group of friends here. We'll have this group of friends here. And we kind of keep them separate, right? So we'll have our work friends. We'll have, you know, our football friends, fantasy football friends, whatever that may be. We then have church friends, or we have a small group friends or something like that. Sometimes we need to get these people together. We need to get them together. And so he physically takes Paul to the apostles so that he can meet him. So they not just, so now Paul isn't just somebody, or Saul isn't just somebody that they hear about. You know, like the myth, the legend of Saul. Now they see he is a person. He is a real person. And so Barnabas, he takes him there. He puts his credibility on the line. And Barnabas has told them how Saul on his journey had seen Jesus, had met Jesus, how he had spoken to him, and how in Damascus he preached fearlessly in the name of Jesus. Barnabas vouched for his friend. And in the end, we see in verse 28, it says, so he went, Paul, Saul, went in and out among them in Jerusalem, preaching boldly in the name of the Lord. You wonder if that was going to be able to happen if Barnabas didn't take Paul to them, if he didn't stand up for them, stand in the line of fire for him. My question is, do you have a friend like that? Do you have a friend like that? Are you a friend like that? For Barnabas, it was risky. In fact, it was downright dangerous, and it can be dangerous to our reputation, to our schedules, to our other friendships, but we can't miss what God is up to. Paul, who would go on to write over half of the New Testament and literally impacted millions and millions of people, had a dangerous friend in Barnabas. And that dangerous friend changed everything for him. And the same is true for every single one of us. Because not only may we be one friend away from changing everything, I really believe that we're one dangerous friend away from changing everything. A couple months ago, I think I was reading a blog or reading something that was posted on Facebook, and it talked about how as parents, we need to raise our children to be dangerous. You know, and you hear that once, and you're like, well, what does he mean? I mean, that means that we are dangerous. We are raising our kids to be dangerous around the people that they are with because they are bringing Jesus to whoever they are around. And so like one of the things last week when we prayed for our kids that are going into school, what we really want is our kids to be dangerous for the gospel in their setting, in their schools, so that they can be Jesus to any student that they meet. How can we raise our kids to be dangerous? And I really think that along those same lines, we need to have friends that are dangerous in our lives, and we need to be a dangerous friend for somebody else. We need to be dangerous like Barnabas was dangerous. So what I want to do with the rest of our time is I want to show three different types of friends that every person needs. They are not the type of friends that we seek out because they sometimes hurt. And my guess is that most of us will find that one, if not all of these types of friends are missing in our life. And we're going to look at it by going to Solomon's dad, King David, and see how God sent him three friends that became the friend that he needed at that time to change his life forever. And the first one was a friend named Samuel. And if you're taking notes, you could say that we all need a friend who makes us better, who makes us better, who believes in us and makes us better. So let me set the scene a little for you. God had rejected Saul as king. Now, this is a different Saul. This is the Old Testament King Saul. God had rejected him, and he took his spirit off of. He was once anointed the king, God's king, but now he operated in life a way that God did not want, and so God took the spirit off of him and was going to place it on the new king, on the next king. And so he called a prophet by the name of Samuel to go and find that king and anoint him to be the king. So Samuel went to the house of Jesse to meet his sons. He was led there, and he says, I need to see your sons. And one by one, they were paraded in front of Samuel. And one by one, even though they were strong, even though they had everything that you would think a king would be, every single one of them, Samuel's like, nope, that's not him. Nope, that's not him. Nope, that's not him. And they get through the sons that Jesse brought in front of him, and he's like, what's going on, God? Because you told me to come here, you told me this is where I'm going to find the king, and now one of them you want to anoint as king. And then God says, well, that's because you're looking at the wrong things, right? You're looking at the outside, and I look at the inside. So Samuel says, there's got to be someone else. And Jesse and, you know, the boys are like, well, there is one more, but, you know, he's out in the field. You know, he's just a shepherd. He's just a little guy. He's kind of the runt. You know, he's not someone that you're going to want. And Samuel's like, bring him forth. So he comes in front of him, and that's David. And Samuel anoints him as king because he saw in him something that the rest of them couldn't see. Not even David's dad could see this. And then we read in 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 12. Says, and he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy and had beautiful eyes and was handsome. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon David from that day forward. No one else was able to see what God allowed Samuel to see. And he looked at David and he says, you know what? God's going to do more through you than you could ever imagine. And he helped him get better in a way that would change his future. Now, chances are that most of the people that you hang out with kind of happen accidentally. Right? It's not when you're looking for a friend, do you find a friend? You know, it usually happens just by chance. It's the guys at the gym. It's the buddies at the office. It's the other moms, you know, on the team with your kids, with the baseball team, whatever. It's the person who sits next to you in class. It's the student that has the locker next to you. It's kind of by accident. But my question is, do they make you better? Do your friends make you better? Do you have friends that make you better? Because you could all be one dangerous friend away from changing everything. Having a friend like that. So I can give you a quick example. I have a friend, his name is Jared, and I hate him. Actually, he's an awesome physical therapist, and I never want to see him again, but he has really become a friend because he makes me better. You know, he does things to me that I don't like. At all, I don't like him, but he does make me better, and he challenges me in a way to do things with my Achilles that I didn't think that I could do, and it makes me stronger, right? It just does. Like this last week, he has me do, you know, these exercises and so forth, and he pulls out these rubber bands that, you know, are horrible and everything, and they take these tools and they scrape your injury to break apart the scar tissue, and it's the most pain you can ever imagine. But anyway, so this last time, he says, I want you to do squats. And so, you know, and I can do that, you know. And so I'm just doing a squat, and I'm, you know, just doing that. And he goes, now, I want you to now add to your squat a jump. And I'm like, okay, jumping got me here. You know, I don't think I want to do that. And he goes, no, seriously, I want you to jump. But I don't want you to, like, jump in the air. I just want you to, you know, lift up like this. Right? So I do my squat, and then I'm lifting up like this, and I'm just time and time again, and I'm just doing that, and it hurts. And he goes, okay, now I want you to do that on one leg. And I'm like, okay, I can do that. He goes, no, the other leg. And so he has me do this, and I'm like, I can't do that. I mean, I really can't. I can't lift myself up off of this foot because my Achilles doesn't work right, and all the muscles are just gone. And so he's like, okay, then let me help you a little bit more. So rather than just do that, I want you to raise this foot up, this leg up to gain momentum so that you can actually get off the ground. And so I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And I did. I don't know if you guys saw that, but it did. It went up like an inch. And it hurts. And he does things to me that really hurt. But he is making me better. He's my friend that I hate, but I really liked going to see him because he makes me better. I want you to ask yourself, do you have someone in your life who makes you better at the things that matter most? Think about the things in life that matter the most. Do you have someone in your life that makes you better? Do you have a friend that helps make your marriage better? Do you have a friend who believes in you so much that their relationship empowers you to be more and do more than you could ever imagine? Do you have a friend who pushes you in a way where you might say, no, 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 I can't do that? And he goes, and they say, let me show you how you can. Let me show you how you can. And then you start believing that you can even do the things that they say. Do you have a friend like that? The second type of friend that we need to have is someone who helps provide strength in our life. And I would say that it's a spiritual strength. You know, people that go through really, really difficult things, and you might say, well, they're just so strong. Well, people that really go through things, there's something more than just a strength, just an emotional strength or whatever it may be. It really is a spiritual strength. They do rely on something way more than just themselves. David had a friend like that. His name was Jonathan. We all need someone who helps us find spiritual strength. So fast forward in David's story. He's anointed to be king, and then he becomes a war hero. Right? He's an amazing hero, and he's able to do so much. And then people start noticing that. In fact, women start noticing that. And they, like girls do, they start singing songs about him. I know what you mean. So they sing this song. They say, Saul has killed thousands, but David's killed his tens of thousands, right? I mean, those are real love songs right there. You know, you find that on all mixtapes back then. And so Saul was like, wait a minute. You know what? I don't like that. I don't like this guy. This guy makes me mad. He, you know, and so Saul gets really jealous, and he says, I've got to do something about this. In fact, I think I'm going to kill this guy. He's after my throne. He's getting all of the attention. And so the king literally makes it his mission to wipe David out. And then in chapter 23, in verse 15, it says, David saw that Saul had come out to seek his life. David was in the wilderness of Ziph at Horesh, and Jonathan, Saul's son, did you hear that? Saul wanted to kill David. Jonathan was Saul's son. He rose and went to David at Horesh and strengthened his hand in God. So the guy who wanted to kill David, his very son, goes to David and gives him spiritual strength, gives him strength. And every single one of you, and including myself, we need those friends who help us find spiritual strength. Because I don't care who you are, you will be tempted. I don't care how mature you think you might be in life. You will be tempted, and you need someone that will walk in when everyone else is walking out. You need a friend who says, I am with you. I'm not just going to pray for you, but I'm going to pray with you. I'm going to strengthen you in the things of God. And I'm so thankful to have friends who, an arsenal of friends, who surround me sometimes when I need that spiritual strength. In fact, the last couple months have been some of the hardest months that I've ever had, and I've had these unreasonably bad weeks, and I don't know if you've had unreasonably bad weeks before, but it's like everything is fine, and then suddenly nothing is fine. With my injury, I have been physically depleted. I've been taking shots from different people, and it just really gets you discouraged, and sometimes you just feel like you're not making a difference. I don't know if you've ever had that before. when you're pouring yourself into something so much and then, you know, it just seems like you're not making a difference, your voice isn't being heard. So I sat down with one of my friends, with my best friend, and we sat on a couch and we talked for a couple hours until really late at night. You know, and I said, I just don't know if this is all worth it, right? I just don't know if it's all worth it. And we talked and we talked and we talked. We're guys, so we didn't cry. Just kidding. I was on the inside. And then he started to remind me of some things. Right, this is a guy who knew me before Jesus. And he's known me after Jesus. He knew me before and the things that I did and the things that I was and the things that I said. And he's known me since. And then he also has seen this whole journey that I have been on over the last 25 years. And the last 10 years with this, almost 10 years with this church. And he starts reminding me of things. He starts reminding me of people. He starts reminding me of the things that God has done and what God is doing now. And that sometimes we need to go into a valley before we could ever see a mountain. We don't, if we're up here all the time, we never realize that this is God lifting us up here until we can go down here and say, oh yeah, I was there. What do I need to do to get back there? So I had a friend who lifted me up, who not only prayed for me, prayed with me. He'll send me a text every once in a great while that just maybe it's a verse of something that just reminds you of, oh yeah, this is who I am in God. He helped me build more spiritual strength. Do you have that? And I'm not just talking about someone, a friend that says, yeah, I'm a Christian, I have a cross necklace somewhere. I'm talking about someone who is waking in the middle of the night with you on their mind. And then you talk to them the next day, and they're like, hey, I dreamed about you, and like before that got weird. He's like, no, God brought me to your mind, and so I got up and I just prayed for you. And you just realized it was at a time that you needed it more than anything else. Do you have people who will help you find spiritual strength? Because if you don't, you might be one friend away from changing everything. We need people who make us better. We need people who help strengthen us, and we need someone who will tell us the truth. Now, this is definitely not one we seek out, right? But David had a friend, his name was Nathan. Because we all need a friend who tells us the truth. And here's what happened to David. David was a man after God's own heart, but then he took his eye off of God, and he put his eye on Bathsheba. Bathsheba was someone who, a woman who was bathing, and he was on top of his roof, and he saw her, and he's like, I want that. And so he ended up committing adultery with her. He broke the heart of God. He put the kingdom at risk. And at that time, he didn't see the gravity of his sin, but God sent him a man named Nathan, a friend named Nathan, who would tell him the truth. So Nathan sat him down and he says, David, I want to tell you a story. Once upon a time, there was this really, really rich guy. Right? He had everything. He had more sheep than you can imagine. He had more cattle than you can imagine. He had riches. And on the other side, there was also a man who had nothing. He was a really poor guy. He was like dirt poor guy. And all he had was one lamb. And this lamb was like close. They were like tight. They were like best friends. It was like a pet. I mean, they did life together. It was everything to this poor man. And now there's a third man that enters the story, and this was a traveler. And the traveler was coming through the land, and he was hungry. He didn't have anything. And in order to feed the traveler, rather than using one of his many, one of the plenty that he has, He grabs the lamb from the man who only had that lamb, and he slaughtered it for food for the traveler. Now, David, of course, like any of us would say, was like, oh, that's horrible. Right? Who would ever do that? In fact, if someone would ever do that, take from somebody that didn't have hardly anything to give it to someone, you know, who needed it, rather than giving them out of his plenty, we would say that's horrible. And so David's like, you know what? That man should be killed. Right? We should do something about that. And then Nathan said those words, and in the Hebrew language, he said, Ataish. Ataish, which means you are that man. You're the man who did that. And then suddenly David saw what he hadn't seen before. He saw his sin for what it was, and he was broken before God. If you want to read what that looks like when someone is broken before God, read Psalm 51. It is his confession. It is him pouring himself out in front of God. Having a friend that tells you the truth is dangerous. That's the kind of friend that hurts. But it's also the kind of friend that heals. When is the last time you had a friend who loved you enough to tell you, don't go there? What you're doing isn't going to work. What you're doing is hurting your family. It's hurting your marriage. It's hurting your children. It's hurting your relationship with God. Do you have someone like that? Do you have someone who will tell you the truth? Because if you don't, you may be one friend away. If you don't have someone that can speak the truth to you in love, then you're missing something. Because you may be one friend away from having the marriage that you've always wanted. And I do a lot of premarital counseling, and I always say to each one of them, I say, if your marriage isn't great, your marriage isn't good. I don't think it's good enough to cruise through life with your marriage. I think we should be constantly pursuing God in our marriage, pursuing each other in our marriage. It should be great. We should always be working on that. It doesn't mean we don't go through times that are difficult, but we should be pursuing greatness in our marriage. And you may be one friend that will tell you maybe that is what you need exactly to make it a great marriage. You may be one dangerous friend away from becoming that parent that you know that you could always be, raising dangerous kids who step out and are bold for the gospel. That they go into their public schools and, man, they will do anything and everything for their friends to know Jesus. You might be one dangerous friend away from being more generous than you have ever been. You meet those people who have a lot that give a lot, but when you meet that person who it's generosity in the core of their heart, that they're going to give away anything that they have so that someone else cannot go without. If you have a friend like that, you'll become more generous. You might be one dangerous friend away from overcoming the addictions that have plagued you for years. That one friend who comes along to say, that is hurting you, it's killing you. Last night when we were talking, with the person from from the Attorney General's office, she was talking about addictions, and she was, you know, talking about, you know, about porn and things. And she says, guys, you need to ask the person across from you, the person next to you, is this an issue? Because you know they hate it as much as you do. We need to have a friend who will stop us, who will help us overcome the addictions that plagued us for so long. You may be one dangerous friend away from learning how to better care for your body. to learn how to say no to that one more cupcake. We need friends like that. You might be one dangerous friend away from tapping into the power of God, where rather than consuming in his kingdom, we use our gifts to serve for his kingdom. You may be one dangerous friend away from waking up and finding your purpose and living it out, living this calling out for a greater reality than what you currently live. We need friends like this. In fact, if we don't have friends like this, if we don't have relationships like that, if we don't have these close friends, we'll continue on in this lukewarm, whatever that may be in your life. So what do you need to do to have those kind of friends? Well, we need to do what our mom told us to do. To have that type of friend, we need to be that type of friend. We need to invite someone this week to coffee, to breakfast. And we need to ask them, hey, there are some things that I'm dealing with, and I need you to help me with that. I need you to ask me these questions. And I know they're hard questions to ask, but I need you to do it. And in turn, I'm going to ask you these questions so that we can make each other better, so that we can help give each other strength. Because it's not okay. It is not okay to go through life without people that are closest, that are close with us, that will love us no matter what. It's just not okay. So what are you going to do? You're going to help others get better. You're going to help them find strength. You're going to love them enough to tell them the truth. Because in Proverbs 27:17, it's a verse that every men's ministry uses so much that it's almost become cliche. As iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. Iron's going to sharpen iron in your life. And you're going to be conformed to the image of Christ. And your life is going to count. Because if you walk with the wise, you'll be wise. Last week we read out of John chapter 15. And I said I wanted to talk a little bit more about the middle of this passage this week. And so I kind of want to end this way a little bit. John chapter 15, verse 12 to 17. I want you to just listen. Jesus said, "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you." That gives us a clue right there. Love each other like Jesus has loved us. "Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you, that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. These things I command you, so that you will love one another." What is amazing is that the very friend we need to find, we have here and now. We have with Jesus. We have a friend who makes us better. We have a friend who gives us strength, who tells us the truth. We have a friend who laid down his life for us. So today we're going to take communion. And in the act of taking a piece of bread and dipping it into the juice, we are recognizing that Jesus' body, that Jesus willingly went to the cross to have his body broken, to have his blood shed for us. Greater is a friend who would lay down his life for his friend. And he laid his life down for us. And so as you come forward to take communion, we have a believer's communion. If you have said yes to Jesus, we want you to be a part of this. And may today it not just be this bread and juice. May we really recognize that it is everything to us. That even though it's a tiny piece of bread, it sustains us because it's the grace and mercy of Jesus that sustains us. And we need it. So maybe today you're like, okay, I just need more grace. I need more mercy. This is an amazing way to recognize that we have all of that in our friend, Jesus. Let's pray. Father, I pray in these moments, God, as we sit here, God, we think through the people in our lives that you have brought forth, that you have brought in front of us. That God, maybe we haven't been the type of friend we need to be. They haven't been the type of friend that we need from them. But God, we can take the steps to do that. We can take the steps to lay down our schedules, to lay down our time, sometimes lay down finances, lay down, you know, comfort in order for them to be able to make it, to believe that you're for them. May by our actions and may by our words know that we are for them and ultimately find out that you are for them. So God, I pray now as we take Holy Communion, we realize that we are in this together. The Father, you strengthen us, you sustain us with your grace, your mercy, and your love. We pray all these things in the powerful name of Jesus. Amen.